kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Do you have an agenda that you like to move towards in regards to topics of conversation based on kind of your fan base and listeners and all that?
Nothing at all. They expect nothing from us and we give them nothing in return. Yes, I know I'm live on Beam. I don't know how Twitch is going, though. So I can't. If I have too many windows open on my computer, it may explode. It's a very real. It's a very real possibility.
Yep, you're live on Twitch.
Sweet. Now I have my chat open for nobody to come join.
Now I'm going to
Both. One of the kitties is attacking one of the balloons.
I'm like, really tempted to just watch that.
They're really going after the portraits of the candidates more so than anything else. And they have like hells of distractions around.
Interesting.
Oh my gosh, one of them was chasing the tassel that somebody's suspending from a string. This is riveting stuff.
This show's going to be interesting for sure. I can tell that. But on that note, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, is CJ. CJ, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Are you? Great.
Fiddly darn diddly.
Fiddly? What the fuck?
I like it.
You confuse me. We have a fairly large lineup of guests today joining us for our interview to lead off the show. Chris Taylor, you're back. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. A little anxious about what's going on tonight. But,
the election? But for the people
the kittens.
The kittens. For the people who aren't caught up, we are recording this on election night. So it's probably a week after election. So as of the time we're recording, we don't know if America's about to start a nuclear war or not. So this is going to be either a fond look back into what America once was, or it'll be just another show.
Oh,
should be fun. Joining
I'm very
us.
Honored to be here then.
Joining us from Mastiff Games, we are joined by both David Bruno and Bill Swartz. How are you guys doing?
We are outstanding. Cocked, locked, ready to rock 24/7. And speaking just for myself, I'll be even more outstanding when this night is over and we have, to show my alliances, Hillary Clinton in the White House, or at least ready to take command.
Hey, you said cocked.
And ready to rock.
that is an important
And how about you, David? How are you doing tonight?
A little distraught, despair. I feel like if anybody's seen the alternate ending for Army of Darkness, I just kind of want to take a few drops of that potion and wake up in like 4 or 5 years and see how apocalyptic things have gotten.
Oh, imagine if it was 8 years.
I just want this to pass over.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun night for all of us because we are in the thick of the election coverage right now, live on the SML Podcast. As it currently stands, Hillary Clinton is sitting at 97 electoral votes. Donald Trump is at 129. So my question to America is, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well,
it feels like a reality show.
Okay.
We're like all on the Truman Show or something. It's weird. Like, how did it get to this?
Well, the footnote there is a lot of those votes are safes. He was going to win anyway. The $5 trillion billion question is what happens in Florida, what happens in North Carolina, and then does he flip any of the other blue states? That's what's where all the bananas are going to be sitting.
Yeah, well, to the shock of no one, those inbred rednecks in Kentucky have went with Trump.
Yes.
So, congratulations.
Hey, he said
hooray.
Right again.
I'm proud to say that as of right now, Pennsylvania, my hometown, is leaning towards Hillary. So,
My place is leaning towards Trump. It's Ohio.
For the first time in my life, I am living in a battleground state because I'm in Texas and it keeps flipping. It is just flippity-floppity.
Man.
Texas.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Riveting, riveting podcast. So, Mastiff Games, when you're not talking elections, what are you guys working on at Mastiff? How should the people know who Mastiff Games is?
Okay. First off, teeny little thing. We're actually called Mastiff. I made the mistake of getting the URL mastiff-games.com because mastiff.com was owned by a group of people that bred Old English Mastiffs. And ever since then, I've convinced the world is called Mastiff. But actually, we're Mastiff Games. Actually, we're Mastiff. So how should the world know Mastiff? And what we're working on are two different things. So, you know, we're a surprisingly old company. I think we've been around now for going on 14 years.
Wow.
And and I can honestly say we are the smallest of the viable publishers, of the viable Microsoft, Nintendo, Sony, full service, full fledged publishers. And I would say if you want to know the Mastiff story, we've gone through a couple of different phases. When we first started, we were largely about pickups in Japan, and we did some really good ones that I'm still pretty proud of, like La Pucelle Tactics, if anyone remembers that.
Hell yeah, that's sitting on my shelf, actually.
Yeah, so we did that. We did Dirt Jockey, which was PS1. It came as a variant of PS1, but it was a construction machine driving simulation that we are still selling on PS1, on PSN.net, but still on PS1. We also did at the very first like year in business, Easter Bunny's Big Adventure, which did not work out so well. I thought it was a good idea, but they can't all be winners. So anyway, we did that for quite a while. We brought over a ton of Japanese products. We also had some budget products. We had the Top Gun license for a long time, for example. And that took us to like sort of 2007, 2008. And I don't know if it's really sort of widely appreciated in hobbyist circles, but the Japanese gaming infrastructure just collapsed, exploded right in there. There are a lot of reasons why. You know, the Japanese economy hit a pretty deep recession. Mobile gaming just took off. But for whatever reason, the Japanese game industry, console game industry anyway, was just decimated. And at the same time it was decimated, the psychology has shifted. You know, it used to be that Japanese publishers, developers were very focused on Japan because the Japanese market was really vibrant. And, you know, you could sort of get foreign rights for it just by, you know, promising you wouldn't be a big pain in their asses. You just were like, yeah, can we please publish this in the U.S.? It's like, well, we're really busy. It's okay, just give us the code. We'll take care of it. We'll do a good job. You can check everything. That's it? Yeah. Okay, fine. Whatever. Keep the change, kid. That was the attitude. And then as the Japanese industry sort of imploded, suddenly not only was there a lot less product, but Japanese publishers had come to realize that their only chance of making money was with foreign product or foreign rights, because there was no Japanese market, as I say. So, you know, after a lot of painful wandering around in the dark, answering the waffle iron, Helen Keller style. You know, we got into hunting and fishing, and we were tremendously successful doing hunting and fishing titles for a number of years. And this is not games as high art. This was 1999, maybe $29.99, mostly Wii U, Walmart, Kmart, Target. You know, really simple, really fun games. Chris mentioned in his review, an old title of ours called Deer Drive. And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys want a diversion? You want to hear the story of Deer Drive?
Yes, I do.
Sure.
Okay, so Japanese market has collapsed, decimated. We got nothing. And we're like, okay, well, that's great because we're really smart and we're really clever. And so we're going to make this game Moon, which we did. I mean, obviously, there's also a developer involved, you guys are very well aware of. But we did a big chunk of work.
Renegade Kid, right?
Yes.
Well, were they Gamecock at the time?
No.
Or was that a different thing?
Well, so here's the deal. Without going into too much inappropriate detail, Gamecock got their first game, the thing that became a sanatorium. What was it called? Dementium?
Yeah, Dementium the Ward.
Dementium the Ward. Got their first game, and I should have bid on it. They came in and made all these incredible promises, and the guys decided to believe them, and so I lost out on that one, which is really unfortunate. But we ended up doing Moon with them. And then Moon was an adventure. And, you know, it was, frankly, the idea behind it was let's do a 3D shooting game on 3DS. And, you know, with 2020 hindsight, that was a really dumb idea because no 3D shooting game has ever succeeded on 3DS. Or, excuse me, on DS. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah. Wait, yes. Moon?
Yes.
I think I've actually played that game. I have it.
It's a pretty good game.
I liked it, yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty good game, but it was not a pretty good business. But anyway, while we were working on Moon, and because Renegade Kid was shorthanded, we ended up doing a lot of stuff on Moon we weren't supposed to be doing, like level design. It's like, well, we can't be Moon all the time. What else do? We need something else. And it's like, well, we need to do some other project, something doable. I know, we'll do this deer hunting game. And it was kind of obvious that, or at least obvious in retrospect, that the only other deer hunting product out there at the time was Cabela's. And Cabela's had turned into this sort of Microsoft Windows 2003, whatever, bloated mess, where there was a ton of functionality, but it wasn't accessible. It just, you know, wasn't a very elegant design to start with, and had been tweaked, you know, every single year for the last 29 years. So it just was difficult to play. I didn't think it was very fun. It was complicated. So we turned back and did Deer Drive, which was basically, you know, sort of deer hunting meets Space Invaders. you know, it was the world's most simple game, but it was fun. It was a fun game to play, and we took the time to balance it. People just loved it. So we went out with Deer Drive. We went to Walmart, and Walmart was like, you know what? No, we don't think so.
Really? So Walmart turned that down?
Oh, my God. They didn't just turn it down. They kind of laughed at it. It's like, yeah, well, no, we have good games. We don't need that.
That is like their prime demographic of customer nationwide.
Well, exactly. there's a twist on this. But so Walmart's like, nah. Went to Target, and Target was like, you know what? Nah. You know, went to GameStop, and GameStop was like, you know what? That's not our customer. Nah. And this kind of went on, except for some reason, Best Buy took it in a small number. And at the time, I should remember the exact number, but I think they took like 450 copies, which even for a modest game is really not enough to be profitable. But they took 450 copies, or 650, whatever it was. It might have been 650. And a little while later, I get my sell-through data, which, you know, is the number of units that have been put in the store and then sold through. And if you're in retail, you live and die by sell-through. It's all about sell-through. How quickly does the game turn over? And that tells you, you know, how they reorder, do people like it, what's going to happen with the prices. It's all driven by sell-through. So I got sell-through, and it was like 400 units or something. It's like, well, okay, this is fine. You know, this says it's week one of sell-through, but I think it probably just got out of the warehouse faster. This is probably 3 weeks of sell-through and so few units anyway, it doesn't matter. And then like 3 days later, I got a reorder for like 1,000 pieces. And that just disappeared. And yeah, you see where this is going. Then, of course, we ended up going out and, you know, going back to all the people that initially passed, and they were all, of course, like, just kidding. We didn't. We said, nah. Couldn't you see we were laughing? No, of course we want this. Why wouldn't we want this? Yeah, back up the truck. And so, you know, and then after a while, we started working with a now defunct company called Zoo, bundling it with a pretty cool orange rifle. You didn't really need it because, I mean, let's face it, the Wiimote was a rifle.
Yeah.
But, It was a fun thing to have, and it did tremendous numbers. So anyway, so that was, you know, you sit down at the blackjack table and you just, you know, get blackjack your first time out, and guess what? Suddenly you're a blackjack master.
My mission is to now find Deer Drive.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, you mean
it's not hard to find in retro circles, actually.
Oh, I think it's still on Amazon. I mean the prices are up, but it's around.
I'll have to
track one down.
I'm definitely getting it. And I also want to get those Remington games.
Well, exactly, and that's where I'm going next. So since and so, you know, so it did so well, and we're so smart. We went out, we did a bunch of Remington games, which did okay. We did a Shimano Extreme Fishing game, which did okay. And then it's like, well, we can't be all hunting and fishing all the time. So we decided we needed to do basically a sort of Call of Duty, easily accessible, as in simple to play, lower priced, you know, not mature audiences game. And so we did Heavy Fire Afghanistan and Heavy Fire Shattered Spear. And then we did Reload, which was also called Reload Target Down. It's like it almost had two names. And that was like a totally non-violent shooting game. It was all shooting. There was hostage rescue and shoot the terrorists and all that. But it was always paper targets or clay targets or training scenarios. So the fantasy was no one ever got shot. So we did that. Then from there, we sort of moved on, did a few random things. We took our entire library. We moved it onto Steam. And that's when, you know, I think in Chris and your review of Gudemin, you're like, well, I hadn't heard of them for a while. Well, that was probably the time when we were porting everything to Steam. Oh, also, speaking of they can't all be winners, we were involved in a weird way. It was this bizarre deal with a product called Banfuse.
Oh, I'm actually looking at that right now.
I own that. It is on my shelf, and I actually enjoyed that game.
You know, it wasn't a bad game. It really wasn't. But, you know, frankly, it shipped a year too late. And by the time it shipped, you know, Guitar Hero was on its tracks. Rocksmith 2 was out. You know, it was a good game, but unfortunately, yeah, it was just a little bit too late. It didn't have great, what they call, market acceptance.
I gotta say, it had a really, really solid soundtrack, so I gotta give you guys props on that.
Oh, it did a lot of things right. It had a great soundtrack. You know, I thought the tutorials were pretty good. You know, the rhythm display, whatever you want to call it, was kind of cool. You know, its ability to pick up and distinguish sounds from any guitar, you know, not a plastic guitar, but just read a guitar strings correctly.
Yeah.
It was pretty good engineering. I mean, there was a lot of really, really smart people that worked really hard on that product.
Didn't you guys work with Harmonix on that?
You know, we certainly did. We, as in Mastiff, didn't. Now, it was a weird kind of deal in that there was another company that was really responsible for doing it. Rialto was its name. And Rialto brought us in to do distribution, just purely sales and marketing. And then as we got into it, they got kind of, I don't say desperate, but they needed development help. So we did a lot of pinch hitting on the development side of things. And they had had a lot of conversations with Harmonix. And Harmonix had looked at it and, I think, given some thoughts. To the best of my knowledge, Weasel Wars, to the best of my knowledge, Harmonix was never actually involved at a development level.
Mm.
And if they were, it was sort of before I got there.
Yeah, because I could have sworn I remember seeing their name mentioned on the packaging, or I don't know if it was just like they lent some of the tech that they worked on with the Rock Band franchise, or if they just helped with like charting things. I remember seeing their name involved with it, and that's one of the reasons I picked it up, because we're big Harmonix fans on the show.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually looking at the package, and they do have their logo on it, but again, I just don't recall what they did. I don't recall what they did, but they were not deeply involved with it.
All right. I wish they would take notes on like some of the songs you guys have in the game. The fact that like no other game out there has Kenny Wayne Shepherd's Blue on Black is a travesty. I love that song so much.
Wow, you're really into it.
Hey, I'm a music fan, and the fact that you guys did Band Fuse makes me happy.
Yay. And I mean, Bootsy Collins, I mean, that was a huge deal.
Yes. I love Bootsy Collins.
Yeah, exactly. What was I going to say? Yeah, and there's just a little side note on Band Fuse. I don't know if you remember this, but there was a... what was it called? Oh, I'm blanking. Give me a second. There was a movie that had actually been... what was it? It was a... Band Fuse went through this thing where it started out with like a great buzz on it, and a lot of people were really interested, and it got a lot of people in the project, and it kind of slipped over time. And as part of that, though, when it was still looking good and people were excited about it, there was a comedy, and I cannot remember what it was called. This is so embarrassing. That was listed as the worst comedy of 2013, I think. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? It was shot with a bunch of stars over a long period.
Was that movie 43?
Yes, it wasn't. Was that the name of it? Is it named just like that? Was it movie 43?
I think so. It was something like that.
Yeah, but that's it. That is absolutely it. Yep, it's movie 43. I just pulled it up. Yeah.
Why do I know that? Why the fuck do I know that?
Because you're a genius. I remember that.
But
the movie had such hype, and then people were like, "Oh, it's so terrible." So I still haven't watched it.
Exactly. If you're like drunk enough and have the wrong kind of take on life, in some ways funny. But yeah, exactly. And if you watch movie 43, you know, there's one little scene. It's about a washed up producer, right, who goes around like pitching this idea for this movie. But where he walks into it, or an agent, I guess, he walks into this producer's movie, the producer's office, and the producer is like, "Hang on, I got to log into Band Fuse." And they show it on the screen. And of course, final product of Band Fuse never was online, so you can actually log into anything. But anyway, that was Band Fuse. That was my detour there.
I think that was more my detour, so I apologize for that.
No. And then anyway, so fast forward to the present. Well, we need to do something. What do we really love? Goodman's a great game, and I was talking to some fairly random journalist who's like, you know, it's kind of Mario with some Zelda. It's like, you know, you're right. It needs to be on a Nintendo platform. And it's like, well, I want a Nintendo platform. I want to distribute it by way of eShop. What is there? Oh, okay. Got it. And, you know, it took a lot longer than we would have expected, and it was a lot of work, but here we are, Goodman 3DS.
Yay! I mean...
I'm happy about it. I had it on PSP, and I was thrilled to see it get a re-release. That's such an underrated, underappreciated gem of a game, and it's cool to see it get a new life.
Yeah. I didn't mention... before in my review, but I really, really like that the right circle pad was actually utilized for the new 3DS, that you can control the camera with it.
Oh yeah,
that was a really good touch.
Yeah, you mean this? Yeah,
the camera nipple.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Dragon Quest VII didn't do it.
Really?
Nope.
Man, friggin' Dragon Quest.
I know. All that money and power, and they didn't even notice the stick.
Well, I mean, without I speak unburdened by any specific knowledge, but I'll tell you, cameras are really, really hard. They just are. And it's just the way it is.
That's why I appreciated it so much. Because, you know, it's not always easy in an action game to control the camera with just the shoulder buttons.
So what led to deciding on Guruman to bring it back, and like why was that the game that you went with instead of something like La Pucelle or Gungrave?
A couple of reasons. You know, one was the fact that it so lent itself to the Nintendo system. I mean, again, you know, if you'd done... I'd love to do Gungrave. I'd love to do La Pucelle. So don't get me wrong. But let's face it. Gutterman really feels like Nintendo. It's definitely got that Nintendo vibe going. Also, you know, you kind of hit on it earlier. It's always been an underappreciated title. It's never really done what I always felt it should do. And I figured part of the reason might be a mismatch between the game and its audience, or, you know, the contents and the hardware audience. You know, when it was first released on PSP, PSP was sort of going through its own problems, and that was mostly a machine for, like, really hardcore gamers. And so that was a little disappointing. And then it did okay on Steam. But I think it's actually done pretty well on Steam. But even so, I think it was sort of perceived as primarily a cutesy game, when in fact it is a somewhat cute game that also happens to be, I would argue, a fairly hardcore action RPG. But on 3DS, you're in a world where people can understand that, because every Nintendo game is kind of cute, and every Nintendo game is kind of hardcore. So it just seemed like a logical home for it.
I agree with that, and, you know, that's probably the Nihon Falcom, like, aspect of it, which I'm really glad to see that now on a Nintendo system, I mentioned in the review.
How has it been doing on 3DS so far?
Pretty well. You know, I'm happy with it. It could be doing better, but it's doing pretty well, I would say, right now. I mean, it's too early to say, but if I had to put it in baseball terms, second base hit, maybe.
Nice. That's always good. A solid double is better than, like, a ground out.
Oh, definitely. You know, and it's a matter of us coming in and, you know, releasing it in North America, promoting North America, releasing in Europe, keeping everything still running in North America and promoting Europe at the same time. And then it's coming out in Japan soon, too. So keeping all three of those balls juggled in the air, and, you know, hopefully that they'll continue to leapfrog off of one another and become a home run.
Can you see this making a jump to consoles at all, either, you know, the Wii U or the Switch or PS4, Xbox?
Well, I think Wii U is off the table. I mean, Nintendo has announced that they're no longer making them. Xbox, I don't see it. PSN, PS4, that could be interesting. That's something I would love to do if we can make it make sense.
I'm sad to hear that Xbox isn't a possible.
Well, look, it's not because there's something wrong with it. It's just a matter of our own resources.
Mm.
In the perfect world, I think we'd do great on Xbox. I think Xbox is a great system.
No, I'll keep my dreams alive.
A game like that, sort of like it seems like a game that you would see, like, Rare making, like a Grab by the Ghoulies or Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah,
it would fit in that kind of same genre on the Xbox platform.
I think that could really scratch an itch on console as well, because it doesn't seem like there's too many of those kind of games on consoles, and Xbox in particular. Like, you have the Ratchet and Clank games on PS4, but they're, you know, Xbox, aside from Rare Replay, hasn't really had anything like that recently.
No, you're right. I mean, like, I was looking at, I got a, for some reason, I got the Toys R Us big book of, like, a holiday guide or whatever in the mail, and I was looking at the video game section, and I was like, God, this is sad. And I was a kid, and when I was growing up, it was filled with awesome games, and not to say that these games aren't awesome, it's just they don't seem like they're enjoyable or bright, chipper games for kids anymore. It was like, I was looking at, like, Call of Duty and Watch Dogs 2, and I was like, God, these are all serious. Like, is this what kids are asking for these days?
It's like they're all M-rated games.
Yeah,
it's the, like, answer is yes. That's what kids are asking for.
It's like, I'm like regressing back to, like, I want to play bright, chipper, fun games. I'm kind of getting sick of, like, +10 headshot and just, you know, it's like, I kind of want to have fun and get away from serious violence and stuff.
Exactly. See, and well, that's why I say bring Gurumin to Xbox One. That's my new campaign. That's my new campaign.
AAA guys don't really seem to be focusing on kids games anymore. or kid-friendly games, I would say, not really kids' games, but that's definitely something that only the indie market's working on anymore.
Yeah, that really seems to be the case. I mean, like, it's like a lot of the developers grew up playing games, and it seems to be that their games are growing up with them also. Yet there's very few developers or larger developers and publishers that are focusing on kid market or kid-friendly games these days, or all ages kinds of games.
And it seems when do focus on something like all audiences oriented, it's not a big AAA game. It's like a downloadable, quote unquote, indie like Unravel or Child of Light.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And those and because of that, I mean, the retail space has shrunk up quite a bit, and we get a lot of comments on social media asking, you know, where's the physical version of Gutaman, and when's that going to happen for 3DS? And it's just like, you know, this has to be, we have to blow the doors off the eShop for this thing to actually become, you know, a physical. We'd love to do it, but it's just one of those things that, you know, we have to see how this, what happens with the eShop version first.
Just and start with 650 copies at Best Buy and go from there.
Yeah, I would exactly. If we could order a run that small, that would be fantastic.
Have you considered
limited games doesn't do 3DS titles yet?
I was just going to ask if you guys have considered chatting with Limited Run Games or like even Indie Box or something to see if they have any way of doing Nintendo stuff.
I mean, we are a publisher. I mean, we do physical goods. That's what our basic DNA is. No, I mean, I have not talked to them, so I hate to say no, I wouldn't. But, I mean, if it's doable, I think it would be doable by us.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the eShop's got to, you know, sell like hotcakes. I want to say it's got to be like the next Smash Brothers in terms of sales. But, you know, we still got to continue to push it and make sure that it reaches a point where we could actually manifest orders for physical copies.
Now, I know we gave it a solid recommendation on the show, so hopefully our audiences...
You gave us a buy it.
We did, because we like it.
Very solid recommendation.
Yeah, everybody who's listening or in the chat, and go out and give us a rating on the eShop, too. Every little bit helps. It's amazing how much it does.
Give us a rating on the eShop, and also, you know, tweet it out. Put it on Facebook. Say, I played it and I loved it.
Yeah, people, do it. Don't make me get angry.
If I had a 3DS, I would.
Okay.
Damn it, CJ, buy a goddamn 3DS.
I don't have money.
They're going to be $99 on Black Friday.
I wish I had $99.
Well, if you didn't buy Evolve, you'd be a tenth of the way there.
Hey, it was, well, I guess a GameStop card, yeah, I could use that. But I wanted Evolve, damn it.
3DS is better.
Eventually.
3DS is better than Evolve. So what's Mastiff working on next?
We got a couple of little projects going on, but I'm afraid there is nothing I'm able to talk about right now. Unless you want the most literal, boring answer, which is getting Gutaman out in Japan.
It's always a good thing. And then, of course, the Xbox version that I'm going to harass you about.
Just harass me all you want. I live to be harassed.
Ask Adam Rippon, the guy who created the Dragon Fantasy series. I'm still busting his balls to get that on Xbox.
Everyone needs a hobby. Yeah.
And I will.
Look at Loot Interactive. You won't leave him alone with VelociBox.
Yeah, VelociXbox. We need that. And Thursday, I'll be busting their balls again. Possibly.
Dragon Fantasy was the mobile RPG, right?
Yeah, it's been on mobile, Steam, PS4, Vita, PS3, Wii U, 3DS, but not on friggin' Xbox.
They're great games, too.
It's really made the jump.
Adam's a dick.
Mobile, when the first one came out, I think there's a sequel, and I bought a buddy of mine, Dale North, did the soundtrack.
Yeah, he's been on the show. I've known Dale for way too long.
Oh, yeah, same.
Like and, yeah, 15 years or something like that?
Well, see, it's small, incestuous industry, isn't it?
I knew him back when he was still Fat Dale North. No one remembers those days.
That's Dale North, the Corgi King, right?
Yes, that indeed.
Is Dale North. Yes.
He's had so many professions since I've known him.
Yeah.
And it's good to see him back on music, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely his calling.
So can you see Mastiff going back and bringing any other games back to current consoles, or are you thinking more of new properties to do?
That's a really good question. I think it's going to be some of each. I think we'll probably, for the immediate future, you know, be doing more pickups and imports. You know, I love doing original games. I think you'll agree we've done some pretty out there games. You know, again, going back to Chris's pretty cool review, you know, thank you for remembering Major League Eating, for example.
Oh, yeah. I really want to track that one down. I actually want to play it.
No, I mean, it's on the Nintendo, what do they call it? It's not the eShop, whatever the Wii downloadable shop is.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The Wii Shop channel.
We just hooked up our Wii U again, so I'll definitely go look for it.
And I'll tell you, from a game design perspective, I think it was kind of groundbreaking in that, you know, we used the controllers in a way no one else had. It's a fun game. It's basically a rhythm game. It's actually really, really good. It's unfortunately, you know, downloadable on the Wii at that point wasn't great. And so many people were disgusted by Major League Eating, despite the fact they get what, 30 million viewers every time they do the 4th of July interview. Anyway, long way of saying, we will continue to innovate. We will do original games from time to time. But I think a lot of what we're doing is going to be pickups.
Nice. I think I actually own Major League Eating on the Wii. I think that was one of the first digital games I picked up, because that came out near the beginning, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
2008, maybe?
2000, somewhere in there.
Back in the day when we were all children.
Right. Although, actually, you know what? It wasn't the first year of the Wii. It was second year of the Wii, but it was November 2008. So I think it was, no, if that's not true, it's July 2008.
Man, I feel so old.
That's almost 10 years ago, gosh. Yeah.
In 2008, CJ saying, in 2008, I was a child. Guess what, CJ? You're still a child.
I mean, I'm not, but...
Hey, no. Something works. If something works, stick with it.
Just keep being a child. He's 18. He's so young.
Oh, you youngin'.
But I'm still an adult, technically.
Damn kids.
Yes. Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
I was allowed to vote today, even though I didn't.
You didn't?
You know,
no, how I didn't
dare you?
I can't say I blame you.
Yeah. I'll let people decide for me. I don't want either one, so.
Well, that they one decide. I understand.
It is a right. And it's a, you know, you're not obligated to do so.
It's not an obligation, no.
Exercise your right not to.
End of the day, the way I see it, though, if you don't vote, it's been really hard to complain.
Well, that's why I'm letting people vote, because either way, it doesn't... I'm one of the least affected people of everybody, so I just let them decide.
Well, if anyone wants a blow-by-blow of the election, I just snuck a glance, and Trump
breaking
is,
news, give us the latest updates. For our election coverage update, correspondent...
All right. So, breaking update, Trump is doing surprisingly well. Clinton won New Mexico and is leading by 1 point right now in Michigan. But Trump has got a handful of other states. Do you know what Dow futures are? Basically, it's when people buy and sell the rights to buy a stock market at a specific price, and it tells you how confident people are in the market. And Dow futures have just fallen 500 points on the fear that Donald Trump could win.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Now, I mean, these go up and down. Also, the betting markets, which, you know, I wouldn't put too much stock in them, but you know, when we started the evening, the betting markets, which is Betfair and Predictit, had Clinton had a 75% chance of winning, and right now she's down to a 52% chance of winning.
Oh, no. No. Oh, goddamn. No.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping this isn't Brexit all over again.
Oh, my God, this is scary.
Well, there's still halfway to go.
That's true. More than that, even. And for all this, the odds still favor Clinton, but it's not going to be a clean sweep, and it's going to come down to the wire.
Like, do you guys think that just that much of America are racist bigots, or are they just stupid?
I don't think it's either. I think there's a couple of things. There's a couple of things going on. I believe that, first of all, a big chunk of America just hates Hillary Clinton. It's just a visual reaction, and they're not voting for Trump. They're voting against Hillary. I think a big chunk of America is really scared. I think really scared people make really stupid decisions. And, you know, Donald Trump has come in there and promised all of these incredible things. And people are so desperate, they're willing to, you know, take him up on his promises. And on top of that, I think many of these people aren't educated and don't understand, you know, why he is saying is often like physically impossible. It just doesn't make sense. But if you're desperate enough and someone you want to believe the guy that promises you the moon and the stars, you'll put that aside. I mean, that's my best take on it.
So, what do you guys think is going to happen tonight?
I think lots and lots of liver damage.
Yes.
That's the best way to go about it.
Oh, I'm going to drink myself stupid tonight. Sounds like a party.
Yeah.
Your giant flash of light just get under the desk or something.
That's not going to save you from nuclear war.
It's not something to do, though.
I just hope this turns out to be like Y2K, where everyone just freaks out, but everything's okay in the end.
That is what we want. And I will say one thing. You know, like a lot of people, I was kind of wondering if something bad was going to happen today. You know, were we going to see a massive denial of service attack if someone tried to shut down the internet to make voting difficult? You know, would there be some kind of polling station violence? And at least from a sort of, you know, administrative standpoint.
It was in L.A. Wasn't there a shooting out there?
Yeah, and I think one person was killed, which I don't mean to trivialize, but, you know, come on, that happens every day. And also there's something this morning where two women, as I understand it, staged a protest against Trump by walking into a Trump-heavy polling station, taking off their shirts and waving signs. But, you know, none of this stuff is chaos-inducing. This all is, you know, smooth election. So
no pulse in chat saying two dead, two injured. Man.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Two dead, two injured, and two girls whipping their titties out, and I missed all of it.
And the funny thing is
damn this election. Damn it.
Well, I mean, yeah, two dead, two injured, and two topless girls. You know, sounds like a fairly slow night in any downtown district in any medium-sized city in America.
Yeah, true. That's just like one alley in New York.
Yeah, exactly. One block in Chicago.
Ah, man. So, what are you guys playing? Like, what kind of games are you playing right now? Let's get off of the election stuff and try to focus on the good of the world again, video games.
The only true good.
I just realized how abrupt that transition was. I can't transition. By the way. I don't know how.
Here's a transition for you. Did you know that there was a Japanese-only Famicom game that came out based on the 1988 U.S. presidential election?
What?
Really?
Yeah, the Bush Sr. versus Michael Dukakis election. And it only came out in Japan.
That's incredible.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the title of it right now. America Daitoryu Senkyo.
Yeah. Which just means American presidential election.
They have a very Sugoi Desu looking Dukakis, I think. Let me I'll punch in the title. You guys can Google it yourself into the chat here.
That's incredible. That reminds anyway. Me. Did you guys see the news that Super Nintendo Sox the Cat game was on Kickstarter to be brought back and released physically?
Yeah, I feel. Isn't that guy asking for $50 just for a download copy?
I don't know. I didn't look at all the details, but I saw it was on there.
Yeah, I want to play Sox the Cat, but I don't want to pay $50 for it.
That is a lot of money.
Because, I mean, even though we may have a Clinton in the White House, going forward, that cat is long dead.
Mm-hmm. What was it, 2008 the cat died? Something like that?
I don't know.
They had information about it on Kickstarter, which I think the Kickstarter's over, so it doesn't even matter now anyway.
But is it only president got paid or over it expired?
I think it just ended. I don't know. I'll look it up. Sucks the cat Kickstarter. So yeah,
I think the best video game that started presidents, U.S. presidents, is Metal Wolf Chaos on the Xbox.
My God, you guys know your old classic games.
That's because we're old.
Yeah, and also Metal Wolf Chaos is the most badass thing ever.
Why have I heard that recently? Did you guys talk about that on a previous episode?
We did.
I've heard it, yeah.
Okay. I was like, God, that sounds really familiar.
It's where you play the United States president who has to fend off an armed uprising by the sitting vice president who attacks him. And everybody's in giant mech suits.
Was that on the Rising Star Games episode?
Maybe. I don't remember. I was on it.
Anna, you've been on a bunch of episodes, Chris. It's too hard to remember.
Have I?
You're up there. You may have been on more than Tim at this point.
Jeez.
Remember, Tim. I just found the Kickstarter. There's still 2 hours left to go for Sox the Cat Super Nintendo.
Look at that timing.
What a how much Kickstarter.
I know. A digital copy is $20. A physical copy is $40. And a complete inbox is $75.
Well, as a gamer, I gotta say, it has to be better than Mighty No. 9.
Brutal. Oh, fantastic.
I was a very disappointed backer when I paid for a cardboard box that I still haven't received and a digital code that they never got my name into, which I'm at this point, it's am I happy they didn't put my name in it, or am I upset that I paid for them not to put my name in it?
Aren't the credits 20 minutes long, though, for all the names?
They have them separated by sections because there's so many backers. It still took me 30 minutes to wait for my name to not appear.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I felt pretty let down.
That is horrible. I remember at the time I had a choice between backing either Mighty No. 9 or Shantae, and I went with Shantae. And even though it's still not out yet, it's coming soon, I feel very, very confident in that decision.
Yeah. I don't think there's been a bad Shantae game yet.
I think WayForward could shit in a box and mail it to me, and it would be better than if I had backed Mighty No. 9.
You probably
want Darkwing Duck remastered.
They would probably be the ones to do it.
Probably.
They could do it.
I don't know, Bill. You want to do a Darkwing Duck remaster?
No.
I mean, at least getting the voice cast for Darkwing Duck would be a lot easier than DuckTales.
Okay, I have to admit, I have lost the thread of the conversation. I do not know what Darkwing Duck is.
You don't know Darkwing Duck?
I plead ignorance.
He's the terror that flaps in the night, yo.
Darkwing Duck came after DuckTales, but it's in that same world, I guess you could say.
Okay.
Disney Afternoon.
It's an animation, correct?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, the early 90s, I guess, animation.
Okay, and it's never been a game, correct?
Yeah, there was a game.
It was on NES?
NES and TurboGrafx 16.
Wow.
Maybe Game Boy. I don't really remember. I have Moby Games up here, though. Let's see.
So you're not the only one that hasn't heard of it.
There is a Game Boy version.
Yeah.
Yes. I feel like that was like Sunsoft or something. Maybe I'm just thinking Batman, since Darkwing Duck kind of has that Batman persona.
Yeah, it was handled by Capcom, I think, on all the platforms.
Get the Game Boy cartridge for $4.99 on Amazon.
That's not bad.
Question, what are we playing? Bill, what are you playing? Are you playing anything right now?
Not really. I mean, the last thing I played, I didn't even really play it because I didn't go all the way through or even close, was Triforce Zelda.
The Triforce Heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And frankly, that was because it was a, 3DS RPG and because it was Zelda. Honestly, although it's gotten a lot better these last 3 or 4 weeks, the 3 or 4 months before that were just insanely busy. There's a lot to do to get a game ready to ship, and we are a very small company, so I was way distracted. At some point, I'd like to start playing Call of Duty. I mean, I haven't even played Black Ops yet, so maybe that's on the to-do list. I don't know.
If you mean you haven't played Black Ops 3, it's okay to skip it.
Is it really?
It's the worst Call of Duty they've ever released.
I don't play Call of Duty, so I have zero input on this discussion.
But then again, this is coming from a guy that kind of liked Ghosts, and most people did not.
So you're saying just go to Infinite Warfare?
Yeah, I think you'd be safe. Especially if you cared about the Black Ops series storyline. 3 has nothing to do with the other two. So
okay.
It don't matter.
I've been playing. Well, like Bill said, we are a relatively smaller publisher. Whenever I do have a chance to sneak in some gameplay, it's either on mobile or so I've been playing mobile games, I guess. I've been playing Granblue Fantasy a bit, which is RPG from some of the creators from Final Fantasy. It looks, I don't know, Hoop in particular. Been playing a little bit of that. And Guilty Gear Revelator, or Exard Revelator. I don't know what the name is.
They have a weird names.
They do. And I actually went back to play some old Genesis games I picked up recently at like a small little game shop in Reno. Called Insector X, which is kind of like a...
Yay!
I knew Chris would know. Chris would have to know.
I know, and... Well, I'm a Taito fanboy, and it's a Taito game.
There you go. So yeah, I went and picked up Insector X for like $25 with case at some little independent mom-pop shop in Reno.
Damn.
So they're playing a little bit of that. I'm a shmup fan. I love fighting games and shmups, but I am not... like super awesome at either of them.
That's my life. I love all these games, and I'm terrible at all of them.
Yeah.
But I'm not like greatest at shmups or 2D fighters.
I am the best at buying shmups. I cannot. Yeah. I'm not very good at playing.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. One credit clear is not my thing, but enjoying them, I'm okay with that.
Always good. Always good. Yeah, oh,
similar
man.
To in the same vein as Goodman, sorta, which Darius Burst, which came out on PS4, PSN, and Steam, they came out as digital only, and I've been using this kind of same reference to Goodman for the people who've been asking for physicals, if it's possible, if something like that's going to happen. They have announced that Darius Burst will be released as a physical now because they've received such great support for the digital version. So that's also something to look forward to for myself.
Nice. I'm actually surprised at how well that sold, given it was, what, $50 when it came out?
Yeah, it was full price, $49.99.
I know a lot of people were like, wow, I'm excited about the game, but that's pretty steep. I think the sales it went on helped it, because I saw the 1 week it dropped to like $12 on sale.
Yeah, that kind of drove me bonkers. Like, that's a bit too much of a sale, if you ask me. I mean, when you have your early adopters who are begging for physical copies, and then, you know, buy a day one for $49, and then 3-4 months later you put it on sale for $12. Felt the sting a little bit.
Yeah, and by the way, just to give you a little bit of perspective on that, you know, it's not that the publishers have put it on sale for $12. I mean, we're talking about stuff in the stores, right?
No, digital.
Yeah, digital PlayStation store.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, never mind. Then, yeah, the publisher has put it on sale for $12.
Friggin' Sony.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's understandable from a publisher's perspective. I mean, you don't want to drop prices, obviously, but what, unfortunately, online, so many customers have been trained to wait for sales, and it's kind of, you know, a vicious cycle, because the more customers are trained to wait for sales, the more publishers feel they have to put in sales to sell the product, the more people get trained.
That's why some companies place their game at a higher price than they should, and then they put it on sale to trick you into buying it at the price they actually wanted you to pay for it in the first place.
But then you're kind of dicking over the people who bought it at release to support you, so you're kind of screwing over your most loyal customers.
Yeah, but it's what pays the bills.
True.
Well, here, you want to know what it feels like to develop and market a video game?
Not sure. Particularly, because I'd be scared.
I want to sleep tonight. Oh, wait, there's an election. I'm not sleeping tonight. Yes.
No one is
about video games.
No one is sleeping tonight. But I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, is it as bad as picking the leader of the free world?
You know, it's much less important to anyone except the people who've, like, taken everything they have in the world and invested it in this roll of the dice. So to those people, yeah. To everyone else, no, it doesn't matter. It's just a routine little business thing. But basically, depending on the game, you're going to take anything, you know, between the cost of a McMansion and, well, in for really small games, you know, the cost of a Ferrari and a half, two Ferraris, maybe three Ferraris. And for a smallish game, a McMansion, and then for a big game, you know, this, it goes up to infinitely. You take all that, you wager that. If it works, you get your bet back, and then maybe, you know, half a McMansion for your trouble. If it doesn't work, you lose a McMansion. And it doesn't work a lot of the time. I mean, right now, and I don't have the exact statistics, so don't, like, hit me up and say, hey, you got the numbers wrong. But something like 80% of the dollars are done by the top 30 titles. Think about that. 80% of the dollars by the top 30 titles. And what that means is, if you don't have, you know, $300 million to spend on development and another $300 or $400 million to spend on marketing, you know, you're probably not going to be one of those marquee titles. So, you know, you spend all this money up front. Some games don't even get finished. Usually they do. Occasionally they don't. You know, you put it out there, and if it doesn't start selling pretty quickly, it's not going to sell at all. And you've just lost money. You've just lost money. And the other thing about, you know, being in video games as opposed to being in a non-entertainment kind of business, especially, you know, compared to the commodity business, is this all market. It's not even normally market-driven. It's a matter of taste. You know, why does this crummy game do really well all of a sudden and this one doesn't? Why do you have all these great little gems that no one plays, and then you have all these other games that a lot of people consider kind of mediocre that do huge numbers?
Like Call of Duty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Call of Duty, when it first came out, was amazingly innovative. But yeah, I mean, that's an example of a huge title that, because it provides a good enough experience and has established itself to sort of a critical mass. You play Call of Duty because everyone plays Call of Duty. You know, it's able to suck a lot of oxygen out of the room. And that leaves a lot of smaller developers in a really hard position. So, you know, when you say, you know, why do they put it up at, you know, $29.99 and then immediately cut the price to $12 online and screwing over their fans, the answer is yeah. And that kind of sounds panicky and bad to me. But and there is a reason people are in this business. There's a huge upside. I mean, it is a business where if you've got a big enough hit, you know, you can do infinitely well. But those are really rare. And it's really easy to be sitting there and saying, oh, my God, you know, we spent everything we had on this. You know, we invested, you know, pick a number, $500,000, which is all the resources the company had. So far, we've only sold $150,000 worth, and we're selling at, you know, $10,000 a month. We need to pay our bills. What do we do? And that's an easy thing to do. So it's not right. It's usually not smart, but it's very, very, very understandable.
But it's necessary, I guess.
I don't even know if it's necessary. I mean, that's a strategy question. It's like, yes, sometimes no. You know, sometimes the panicky thing to do is the right thing. You know, this is games. You know, there is no one right answer. It's not like you do this and it's the correct thing. But it's certainly understandable. And I think it's really tempting as a fan, and understandable too. I mean, as a fan, you pay your money and you have a right to expect a great experience in return. That's the way it works. But I think a lot of times as fans, it's very easy to forget, you know, the amount of investment that goes into these. You know, going back to your comment earlier about Leader of the Free World, how at least for the people who've staked their lives on them, what a big deal it is. And how much it hurts when it doesn't work.
So I guess the world wants to know, when is Guruman going to be in a Humble Bundle with 12 other games for $350?
Well, there's already like...
Not like we haven't seen 3DS games there before.
Yeah. Capcom's done it.
Yeah, I mean, look... And, you know, it's not going to happen today or tomorrow. You know, at some point, would it happen? Why not? I mean, and put differently, one of the beautiful things about, you know, online commerce is, yeah, you can eventually lower the price. But I wouldn't hold your breath. I would go to the eShop right now and buy a copy.
And then the next week, it's on sale. Yeah.
it is quite a lot of game for $14.99. And... Yeah, that is definitely one of the things that I've seen echoed across almost every review. It's a lot of game for $15, which, I mean, speaking purely as a gamer, it is. That's like a game I would have paid back in the day, like $49 for myself.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, and that is one thing, too, that's kind of frustrating, is there are so many games offered for download, even on sort of frontline systems like the 3DS, that are basically ported phone games. And this is a full-fledged, you know, 35 hours worth of gameplay, fully voiced. It's not a AAA title, but I'm going to call it an A title, even arguably a AA title. And yeah, $14.99, that's just ridiculous. It's just way ridiculous.
And to go back to the previous podcast, the $5 portability charge is more like a 3D portability. Yeah, I guess you could say, since it's spent, like, what, Bill, 15 months in development?
Oh, you mean Chris's review where it's like,
It is $5 more than the Steam version, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to factor into it.
Well, here, I will backpedal my statement right now and say that the extra $5 is for the extra screen that makes it 3D. The extra 30 frames.
It's also for all the time you save because it loads so much faster. Yeah.
Yeah, I would only play it on 3DS. Like, that's the system I play, like, 90% of the time. So, it's, you know...
And
it's
it
fantastic
is a
for me for that.
Experience. I mean, all the little things, like the improved inventory, you know, the improved camera, the faster loading times. I mean, it's just... And the fact that it is portable.
And in 3D.
And in 3D, of course.
Can't forget the 3D.
What was that?
I said the 3D version looks good. Like, when you actually have the 3D dial, like, you know, cranked up.
Yeah, like, and I mean... For the record, if you're in 3D, it means you're drawing two screens, which means it might be 30 frames a second, but it's really 60 frames a second because you got to do it twice.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to, is like, that's where the $5 comes in, is that you get that extra 30 frames added to the original to get the two images.
And then the bottom screen, so that's like 90 frames a second.
Oh, yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You get three screens for the price of one game.
So basically what you're saying is the 3DS is actually better than the Xbox One and PlayStation 4.
It's better than, yes, everything.
Better for me because I own one. That's the difference between it and those other two.
You poor, poor bastard.
Aw.
Hey, he's having fun with it.
I guess
it's an awesome system. Again, if you don't have a 3DS yet for some reason, Black Friday they're going to be $100, and the first thing you should do is buy Gurumin.
Yep. I have a Lite.
You can't afford that.
Disclaimer, though, it's not the XL version, and I really like the XL version, even though it can become like a little bit fatiguing on the hands after a while.
Bitch,
it is
bitch,
the new
3DS,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is the new one. It's just not the large one.
Yeah,
it's a nice looking one though. I like the design on it. It's
a black and a white one. I think they have some etching on it, like Mario Brothers etching or something.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
And it's all done in black because, you know, Black Friday.
Well, they have, I believe there's a black one and a white one, isn't there?
Is there?
Oh, yeah, there is a white one. Yeah. I just like the fact that there's a black one that you can buy on Black Friday. I don't know. Silly like that.
Well, isn't there a black one at all times? So
true.
For the people really in chat, Friday I actually I pulled up a picture for the people watching the stream right now. So you can see what the system is going to look like. Be aware that it will not include an AC adapter, so that's another $10 you'll have to drop. But
That's actually true for all the systems, though.
Sneaky.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's because they assume that you already have one of the four dozen other DSs that use the same charger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so even the DS Lite uses the same charger as those?
Not the Lite, no.
Fucking why? Of course I own the one that doesn't.
Nintendo and Apple have had a long history of kind of mirroring one another.
So what you're saying is they're going to get rid of the headphone jack next.
That's up next.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Well, I don't see why that's such a bad thing myself.
Technically, they already did that. What Game Boy was it that dropped the headset?
The Game Boy Advance SP.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't have a headphone jack. Even the Micro did, I think. I think the Game Boy Micro had a...
I think so.
Was the SP the clamshell, little square clamshell one?
Yeah, the clamshell one did not have one. You had to have an adapter.
I didn't even notice that.
Apple's just ripping off Nintendo every chance they get.
Yeah, the Game Boy Micro, which is like the smallest, little, tiniest game system ever, actually had a headphone jack.
Yeah, I have the Famicom Micro.
I never got a Micro.
I still have one sealed, too. I bought two of those.
Sweet.
But
I had
a lot of weird games, like just I've sold on eBay. I had a copy of Star Fox Super Weekend I sold on eBay. I just got rid of a double-sided wall scroll or a Shin Megami Tensei wall scroll I had signed. I got an E3 and tons of stuff off of eBay. Just all this weird, rare gaming stuff collected over the years that I have no use for anymore, really.
One day I'll get one of those Mother 3 Game Boy Micros.
Yeah, same. I really want one of those.
Now that they cost like $500 or something stupid. But anyway, Bill and David, I know we've been talking for over an hour now. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or anything else you wanted to say about Gurumin?
You know, I think we hit it. I thank you for your support. It is a fantastic game. It is an incredible bargain at $14.99. You know, everyone, I hate to blow my own horn, but the guy who's supposed to do it is out to lunch, except they're not. Chris, you're right here. You know, if you like action RPGs, you're not going to find anything better for it on the 3DS.
That's right. Yeah. We're a bit biased and all, but yeah.
Gurumin is fantastic. I reiterate, it is well worth the purchase.
There you go.
All right, sounds good. Do we have a final election update for the...
Yes.
You don't want to know.
You do not want to know. I was just looking at it. New York Times is giving Donald Trump an 80% chance of winning.
Oh, Christ.
Clinton may just win the popular vote, but looks like Trump will probably win in the Electoral College.
Oh, no.
And the Dow Jones future have plunged like 600 points.
And the cats are fighting.
Oh, no.
Back to 0-0.
Well,
it's just a mess. It's a total disorder.
If the world ends before this episode releases, thanks for watching the stream.
It was a pleasure.
Been nice knowing y'all.
Yeah, and thank you for having us on the show. It's a wonderful way to lap map to spend my final day on Earth.
We're all gonna die. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with the rest of the show if we're not all dead. So Bill, David, do you have any final words to end this section of the show?
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you guys very much. It was fun.
Yes, thank you guys.
I didn't ask you, Chris.
Oh.
Welcome back, everyone. I am joined by a guest at this time, calling all the way from the beautiful and not freezing cold state of Florida, is James Morgan of IndieBox. James, how are you doing today?
Man, it's so warm and just perfect. The sun kisses you when you walk outside. It is probably the perfect day. I'm so sorry to hear that it's freezing cold there where you're at. It's really unfortunate.
Are you trying to see if we could start a fist fight over a Skype call? It's so warm here, and there's girls in bikinis right outside my office right now, and I'm like, I'm staring at a cat. So
that's right off the bat, first 5 minutes, fisticuffs.
Hashtag fuck you! No. We're going to throw down right now. So for the people who don't know what IndieBox is, tell us what IndieBox is, what IndieBox does, and all that fun stuff.
Okay, well, I mean, the short version is that IndieBox is a subscription box, sort of like 1UP or Loot Crate, where people that love playing indie games or video games in general would subscribe to our site, and they would then get a box in the mail that is a collector's edition video game that is completely made by us, and it is for games that you would never see on store shelves. You know, games that in Walmart and things like that are basically like, you know, your Halos and your Call of Duties, your AAA titles that have big publishers behind them. And the term indie box comes from the nature of the games that we work with, which are indie, which mean independently developed, free of publishers, or mostly smaller teams, 1 to 3 man, things like that. And so we work with them to create merchandise for their for their intellectual properties that they're working on or have finished. And so each month you're going to get a full collector's edition box in the mail. That box is like the big PC boxes that that are from the old days, as we like to call them. And you also get the game on disc, DRM-free for Windows, Mac, and Linux. You also get the soundtrack CD, so you can pop it in your car or your favorite home stereo system. And then we do full-color manuals with the notes section in the back, just like now, Grandma.
For our younger audience, what is a manual?
Oh, God. So a manual, so stay with me, kids. So basically, back in the day, manuals are these little booklets that contain directions on how to play the game, different character and enemy bios, any sort of storyline setup, sometimes even storyline that's not even in the game that just kind of sets up why you're playing, who you are, and the history behind certain characters and things like that. It also would give you tips and tricks. There would be the credits section in the back, so you would know kind of who worked on what games. And then always the notes section that allowed you to write in the manual any kind of thing that you needed to remember, whether that be codes or secret locations of things like that. That was the time before the internet where you could add wiki articles for everything. But these are classic items of gaming culture that, you know, have fallen by the wayside in the search for the almighty profit margin. And so you've got those things inside the box, but then we go a step further and really crush your nostalgia glasses to where we throw in collectibles as well. And collectibles can mean a lot of different things. They can mean plushes. They can mean figures of different characters or enemies. We've done replica items. We've done some really off-the-wall stuff, like a fully functioning office tie for the Stanley Parable. we have done some really great and crazy things over the years. And so that at the heart of IndieBox, that's what we do. We work with indie developers to create really cool collector's edition games.
Which I love, because for people who listen to our show frequently, they know that I have way too much collector edition shit in my house. like way too much. Like way, way too much. But I've always known about IndieBox, but I never really looked into it too much, mainly because I'm a console guy, not much of a PC gamer. But my co-host and I, on one of the episodes, we were just chatting about like all the different crap that I have in my house, and he brought up my my giant statue for Brutal Legend. And
oh, nice.
We started kicking around like, oh, I wonder if there's a Brutal Legend collector edition that ever got made. And of course, a cursory Google search led us to your site and the fact that you indeed released a Brutal Legend collector's edition.
That's true. And I guess to kind of add not an apostrophe. What is the
asterisk?
An asterisk to that. Thank you. See, we're improving our relationship from our initial fisticuffs already.
Indeed.
So
I already put my my shattered bottle down. So.
So Brutal Legend. People will say that's not indie. Actually, it sort of is. If you look at Double Fine, the developer behind the game, Double Fine by trade is an indie developer on its own. The physical copy that was released in stores was actually published by EA. And EA severed the relationship halfway through the agreement, and still they had to uphold putting it in stores. So by the time it was actually finished, all the rights, 100% of the rights, still went to Double Fine, and that's still their game. They still made it as a studio. So it was technically an indie game, which is crazy, not most people know. But yeah, the collector's edition was awesome. It was the fifth anniversary of Brutal Legend. And Brutal Legend, if you don't remember, had a myriad of genres kind of packed into it, which I thought was freaking amazing. It kept the gameplay really fresh, and you always had new challenges to try to overcome in different ways. And so in that box, we did an old school Nintendo style box for that. So it was a little bit smaller. And if you're a fan of any sort of like old rock and roll music. You remember the Metallica self-titled album, or excuse me, Black Album, and the AC/DC Back in Black album as well, where those both of those artworks were like completely black, but then they had black gloss for different graphics on them. And we did that exact same thing on the collector's edition as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was like some really great graphics on both sides where it was just matte black and then gloss for the graphics. So you had to turn it a certain way to get like the full effect. Like, it was just phenomenal box in its own right. And then we also made some really cool collectibles on top of like the CD and soundtrack and all that stuff. We did the, let's see. So one of the monsters in the game has really big teeth. And so we turned one of, his teeth, into a guitar pick. So like you can play guitar with his tooth. And then we, the famous car that he drives around in, we actually made into a, an air freshener that you hang in your car. It was called the Deuce.
Oh my God. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we've done some crazy things in our collector's edition, and that's all because basically when we work on these things, we don't think about like, oh, how do we get a plush out of this, or how do we get a figure out of it? We really think about what we can do to make the products that we're creating 100%, I guess, kind of feel like they belong in the physical realm.
Yeah, it's not just like a generic, oh, this is, you know, all collector's editions have this, so we're going to do this. It's like, what would work well for this game?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I never knew it was in the Brutal Legend collector's edition. Like, so many of the games in your store have pictures of what was in there, and for Brutal Legend, it was just a picture of the box. And I tried, like, looking through the details, and I never really saw any information about what was in there. So the fact that there's, like, a guitar pick and an air freshener in there makes me want this thing even more.
Yeah, there's a little more in there. It's available in our store right now. We have a few left that you can pick up. We've just kind of peppered the offering. We haven't let them, like, go completely out all at once. So if you want to pick one up, there's other cool stuff in there as well. But I won't spoil. That's half the fun of opening up the collector's not knowing what's in it. I mean, I'm not sure how old you are, Joe, but I mean, I'm 37 years old. And so,
I'm probably neck and neck with you because I'm 30, okay. I'm 30 as well.
Right.
I'm 35. I'm 35.
How about that? So I remember when growing up, the original Nintendo came out, and I remember when Sega Genesis came out and the Super Nintendo and all those types of things, and going to the stores and picking up the boxes and looking at them, or going to Toys R Us and they had those like plastic flaps that hang down.
With the cards that you take up to the front.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, those cards were sometimes some guy like stocked them wrong and they were upside down. And so you're trying to like twist your head around trying to see when you flipped up the backside because he didn't know how to put it in correctly. Like,
that guy was a dick.
All those things. I remember like finally settling on a game, and you know, the only information we had back in those times were like Game Pro magazine or Nintendo Power. There was no like internet. You didn't like your friends were like, dude, you can pull someone's head off in Mortal Kombat. And you're like, holy crap. And you know, that's word of mouth was so huge. And so you finally select that game that you're going to get, your parents get it for you or whatever. And you immediately hop into like the backseat of your car. And you tear that bad boy open. And every single thing that's included in that game, other than like what you expect, which is the cartridge, is a surprise. And it's its own fun thing. Even if it's like a quarter page flyer for Nintendo Power, and it talks about, you know, the bullet points of why it's cool to be part of the Nintendo Power subscription service or something like that. Like, you read over everything. That manual.
I could get a free strategy guide.
Exactly. Yes. You know, you read over the manual cover to cover. If there was anything extra, like stickers, like you were over the moon. I remember when Killer Instinct released on Super Nintendo, and there was like the CD of Killer Cuts, which was like the soundtrack.
Hell yeah, man.
Dude, I listened to that thing over and over and over again. And it was incredible. Like, that magic of holding a game and not knowing what you're going to get in the box, and just being so happy to have it. That's what we do. That's what we aim to bring to gamers now, is that feeling of being able to physically take in a game and be hyped about it on a physical level before you ever start playing it. And, you know, we still adhere to, you know, some of the customs that are now, you know, popular, where, you know, you get your Steam code in the box as well. It's not just a physical copy, so you can add it to your Steam library. Like, we don't ignore the future. It's just having that physical version is something special. You know, it's something that you don't get nowadays. You get a disc case, and all it has is a sheet of paper about telling you if you start, you know, having seizures or something, then contact the doctor. Or here's how to hold a controller. I mean, it's super lame, really.
I forget what game it was, but I opened it up and I saw a nice thick manual. I'm like, oh my God, there's an actual manual in this. And yeah. Then I opened it up and I started flipping through it, and it was just like 14 pages of the EULA in different languages. And I'm like, oh, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I was so excited for a minute that I, you know, instead of taking my phone in the bathroom, I could bring a manual in there. That's what we used to do in the old days, kids. So never touch your friend's game manuals.
That's right. Hey, even like the new Nintendo, the mini Nintendo that just released, they have, whenever you buy it, there's links to an online version of the printed manuals that you can look and look at before you start playing the game or while you're playing the game. It's such a lost art. And we do a game manual with every single game that we release. The bare minimum is 24 pages.
Nice. And
that's longer than a lot of the games I used to get back in the day would have. But we've done 24, 32. We have one coming out soon that's 44 pages. So it's...
Is that a game that's been announced, or is that kind of like a hush-hush?
It is a game that's been announced, but it's not announced, or it's not part of our... subscription offering, which kind of leads us into a different thing, which is I mentioned that these games you'd never see on store shelves, and that was true up until about like a couple of weeks ago. We just announced that we're going to be putting games on GameStop store shelves, so you'll be able to look at your favorite indie games and buy them physically in GameStop stores around the country. We announced 10 titles starting off mid-November. So in just a few, like a week or two from now, they'll be coming out. And they are all limited edition steelbooks of different games. And
which immediately caught my attention, because I am an absolute whore for steelbooks.
that's fantastic. That's awesome. We're going to be doing games like Nuclear Throne, Guacamelee, the game that has a 44-page manual of Stories, The Path of Destinies.
I love that game, too.
Yes, so good. I mean, we've got an entire lineup of games. And then we've also partnered with them to also bring, like, you know what? I'm not sure I can talk about that yet.
Oh.
Ah. I am so sorry. I cannot divulge that information.
Well, damn it.
More indie games are coming to GameStop. This is not the end. This is only the beginning.
When would the news be made public? Because it's possible the episode won't go up until after.
Probably around release, I think.
Yeah, it'd probably be too far off.
I don't want to chance it.
Man, so is it just going to be like more, I'm sure you can't talk details, but now I'm curious, so I have to ask, is it just going to be like more steelbook style releases, or are you guys working with GameStop to bring some of your bigger collector's editions?
A little bit less than that. We're trying, so IndieBox exists because, and I promise I'll get to the point here, IndieBox exists because I was a game developer in my previous life, and all of my games that I made, whether it be with teams or just a couple people, none of them really saw like this crazy light of day, and never saw critical or, you know, success on that level that I wanted. And it was not until I took a break from the industry for about a year and went into banking software that I realized how much I missed the game industry, number one, and number two, that there has to be another way for people to make it in the games industry besides just like striving for that one big hit from a Steam sale or something like that. And so we actually aim as a company to bring as many indie titles to light as possible. And that is kind of the core vision that we have for the company. So when I say that, we're not necessarily doing collector's editions inside GameStop stores as of right now, but more indie games will be featured in stores. I'll say that.
Nice. I'm eager to see what else. Are you guys only going to be doing PC stuff, or is there any shot that you guys might partner up for like Nintendo, Sony, Xbox, stuff like that?
We've done some partnership with developers that have worked on Sony titles before, like Brian Provenciano with the game Retro City Rampage. We've helped on his distribution and fulfillment side. Developers can pretty much I think work with Sony themselves, I believe. I'm not sure how accessible it is, but that's something I've heard. But we would love to do things like that with the different console publishers. We're just waiting for the right time to I guess work on that and in the right ways. We're really good friends with the guys over at Limited Run, who do indie PS4 titles, and they're doing a great job. I mean, they're just killing it, and we want to see them continue to succeed as well. And so you know, we're not really looking to try to compete with them or anything like that. We actually introduce each other to different developers a lot, and it's just a really great relationship. So console for PS4 might be something that we're holding off on for a while. But who knows? Maybe there's some other stuff for other consoles in the future.
Nice. We're a fan of the Limited Run guys. We've had Chris and Doug on the show before.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I was amazed the first time we looked at the lineup of games that you have on IndieBox on the show when we were just flipping through everything. We're like, oh my God, we reviewed that one. We've had SteamWorld guys on the show. We had Lovely Planet guys on the show. We just going through all the Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, Assault Android Cactus, all these different people that we've had on the show. And we're like, oh my God, how did we not pay more attention to IndieBox? And that's what led to me emailing you guys and trying to get you on the show and chat with you. I'm just so many awesome, awesome games. And I'm curious to know, like, how do you decide which games and which developers to work with?
Well, we have a few like hard criteria that we work around. The first one is that we support Windows, Mac, and Linux. So if the game doesn't support Windows, Mac, and Linux, then it's something that we can't work with, unfortunately, for the subscription box. We also look for DRM-free version of the game. A lot of gamers really like the fact that they can get a DRM-free version and not be tied to a system. About 25% of our audience is using our DRM-free versions. So we make sure that those two criteria are met. And then we look at the kind of more loose criteria. This is how do the fans respond to it in regards to like ratings on Steam or things like that? What's the community like? Is there a demand for the game? Does the community really rally behind different initiatives that the developer does? Would it be a good fit for physical products? There are some games that, you know, there's just not a lot of things you can do physically with it. And we like to make really cool collector's edition items. So there's just a lot of different things that we look at that go into the selection process. And yeah, I'm excited about 2017. We've got some really great projects that we're working on and some bigger names too. So
interesting. The teases continue. The non-specific teases.
I wonder if I'm allowed to tease our December game, because we announced November as Halcyon 6. So Halcyon 6 has already been announced, but we're finishing that one up. And then we've already done production samples for our December game, which features some things that we've never made before. So I'm really excited about that. That's gonna be fun.
Well, if you can't talk about what game it is, could you talk about the things that you're making for it?
Oh no, I totally can't.
Son of a bitch. I'm trying. Yeah, I'm blown away by the list of games that you guys have collector's editions for, and there's so many that are just completely sold out. What is the smallest run that a game has gotten? Like, what is the most limited one?
The first one we did 250 units of Teslagrad, and there are some out there still in the wild. I think probably 3 or 4 months ago, I saw one up on eBay. It had been opened, though. It's been a while since I've seen an unopened one. But yeah, we get notifications when people put things up on eBay. It's kind of funny because we'll see like an Axiom Verge or something like that go up, and then it'll sell for like $300.
Jesus.
And it's like, whoa. That's such a big boost for us as a small team, because we're like, wow, what we're doing is, it's really making a difference. People are loving what we're doing, number one, but then those developers are having their intellectual properties grow to more recognition and bring them hopefully more sales in the future and things like that. So it's really cool to see that stuff happening.
And how many copies of those games do you guys hold on to and then sell on eBay later when demand is up?
Well, hold up. We hold on to 5. But they are like in our company, like it's not a physical vault. It's a shelf, but we call it the vault.
There's just no cover on it. It's a vault. It's just always open.
That's right.
And it's not fireproof or accident proof.
Oh no! Don't stop! Don't don't even make me speak like that.
Hurricane proof. You're Florida, right? Yeah.
Yes, right in the middle of the last one. We're in Orlando.
Oh man.
Yeah, hour drive to any beach.
I hate you. So what was the selection process in the GameStop lineup? Because I know a couple of the games there, you don't, like, they weren't part of your previous monthly offerings. Like, are those games that are going to stay exclusive to the GameStop editions? Are those things that could eventually have a full collector's edition made?
Maybe one day. We'll see. A lot of them don't fit the Windows, Mac, and Linux mold that we need them to. So it was our chance to, again, bring to light as many games as we could that we thought were fantastic and needed to find a broader audience through retail distribution. And so, games like Guacamelee and Nuclear Throne and Axiom Verge have seen critical success, and that's fantastic. But those games are going to help bring people into the stores and getting eyes on those shelves. And those other titles that maybe aren't as well known, like Story's Path of Destinies, fantastic game, but not as well known as like Nuclear Throne. And so we're hoping that what that does is it helps bring more people to discover those games as well, and bring those developers a new audience.
Nice. What is your favorite of the lineup that you guys have for GameStop? Out of those 10 games, what do you think is your favorite game? I'm making you pick a child. You got to do it.
No, this is not fair.
I'll try to make it easier. Which one do you hope gets like that extra attention? Which one do you think is most deserving of the extra eyes on it?
You know what? There's a few that I really, really love. I think that Jotun, depending on how you want to say it.
The developers actually said Jotun because no one would ever say Jotun correctly.
Exactly.
Because that was my mistake when I had them on. I was like, is it Jotun or Jotun? They're like, well, technically it's Jotun, but no one will ever call it that. So it's just Jotun. We're good with Jotun.
You're totally correct. One of my first like introduction meetings with those guys, when we were just kind of kicking around ideas, they kept saying Jotun. And I was like, okay, that's how we pronounce it. So I told the team, which is about 12 people, I said, all right, we're going to have our kickoff meeting. If anyone has a question about how to pronounce the game, because it's like from Nordic mythology and all that kind of stuff, it's Jotun. And then we get into a big group meeting and have, you know, our Skype chat where everyone's talking together with the team of Jotun and all that. And the first time they mention the game, they say Jotun. My whole team looks at me like, what are you doing?
This is your fault.
Yeah. You've damned us all. So yeah, that was really funny. But you know, they've got a really great story with their Kickstarter process and how they got the game to come to be. And the hand painted artwork and animation is just something that you know, a lot of painstaking time and care was put into that. Not that the rest of them don't have that, but that hand-drawn art and animation style is not seen very often anymore. So that's a fantastic game. I really also like Punch Club.
Hell yeah.
Punch Club is just like the gift that keeps on giving. Right when you feel like you've mastered it and you're like, okay, I know the plan now to like level up quickly and be the best that I can be. You then have to start balancing mechanics and things like that, and it becomes a whole lot harder. So to me, that was a great challenge, and they've continued releasing content for it. They've just announced the sequel, Punch Club 2.
Yeah, so, and they also announced easy mode for the first Punch Club, which takes away the stat decay.
Yes. So, you know, there's a lot of great games in there. Chariot is an amazing two-player game. I definitely recommend doing couch co-op with that. There's speed mode, speed running modes where they do like challenges within the game. Like the developers are still doing that. There's just all kinds of great things about every single one of these games. That if you asked me to pick one, like if I was going in the store and buying one, I just couldn't. They're all pretty. They're all so pretty. Like, it's just great.
Like, I'm looking at the lineup, and I'm just trying to figure out, like, which ones can I afford? And I'm just like, well, I need all of them, really. I need the whole lineup.
You do. Because they're going to look amazing on that shelf, man.
They are. And I'm not even a PC gamer. What the hell is my problem? And, like, half of these games I already have Steam keys for, so I don't need them. But I kind of need them.
Yeah. I mean, steelbooks. Who doesn't need more steelbooks in their life?
I know. And that Stories one. I think if I have to pick just one, I might have to go with Stories just because, I don't know. It needs more attention. It's an awesome game. It's a gorgeous looking steelbook. But then there's Rogue Legacy. That one, God damn it.
That Stories has that 44-page manual, man.
See, you're already getting more value.
Yeah, seriously. And the soundtrack. Each steelbook is a double disc set.
Exactly.
You get the soundtrack and the game and a Steam code.
And an art print.
Yeah.
Like, come on, people. They're $20 each. Don't be a cheap bastard.
It's a really great deal, actually. It's like $5 more than buying it on Steam. Like, come on.
How are you guys making money, by the way?
We're not. We're totally not. I'm working out of a rented out garage at this point.
Makes sense.
That's not true. We're doing a lot of different things. Our subscription box is our primary business model, but we get to work with a lot of great developers that want physical products, whether that be games or plushes or figures or things like that. Or when developers have successful Kickstarters, we help do not only the production of the items that they need to be that need to have made, but then we also handle all the warehousing and fulfillment of everything. So we offer a lot of functionality for developers to have a physical presence for their IPs. And so it's afforded us to do a lot of great things and make cool things as well.
And then even for people who missed out on some of the collector's editions, you have some of the old ones still available. And then you have just an indie merch section, which I'm flipping through and I'm like, I need that. I need that. I need that. I need like the Crypt of the Necrodancer plush.
Dude, that thing's awesome.
Or Dr. Hopsy or the Axiom Verge. Like, I need all of this stuff. And I am poor.
Okay, the Crypt of the Necrodancer plush, the singing shopkeeper. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Oh, no. That is
amazing.
So he has like
14 tunes. I think it's like 7. But he sings like so many different songs when you squeeze them. It's fantastic.
I think you just convinced me that that's got to be like the top of my priority list. Oh, man.
Support indie developers. That's why we're here.
Yeah, and like so many of my friends worked on the music for that game as well, because Danny B did the main soundtrack and then like A-Rival and Vert did the bonus soundtracks for it. I've known those guys for years, and now I just got to like buy all this stuff.
Did you see when they won like the Game Developer Awards thing and they brought the plush up on stage and played it on the mic?
Oh my God, no, I didn't.
Oh, that was so cool. Our whole team was like freaking pumped. That was amazing.
I just need to do a shopping spree of your website. The fidget plush? I mean, come on. And then my wife would probably love the socks pack, the indie socks.
Oh yeah, that started out as like an April Fool's joke. We're like, what rhymes with box that would like not fit for indie games whatsoever? And someone was like, indie socks, and we're like, oh my God, now we have to make them. Like, that's such a good idea. We have to actually make them. So we launched an April Fool's joke that you could actually order. And so yeah, now we have like indie socks.
Six pack. I might have to do a six pack. Meat Boy, Axiom Verge, Necrodancer. Oh my Lord.
Dude, you buy the six pack and you get Ultimate Chicken Horse on Steam for free with it.
Oh, that's awesome. Like, I have to stop looking at your website because my wife is going to wake up and find like $700 worth of charges on the account. It's like, what the fuck did you do while I was asleep? I'm like, I can't help it. It was a good interview and they had a lot of good stuff.
Say like, I was drunk. We've gone too far. I can't go back now.
So what is the craziest physical merchandise you've made for a game? Either like the most elaborate or just like the weirdest?
I'd say like the most elaborate is the shelf. People call it the bookend that we did for Axiom Verge. So we did like a shelf sitting unit that was the Ulse Nova head. That we had fully created, like, and modeled out of clay, and it was made in resin. It's really heavy. It's superb. And it was just an incredible product to make and give to people. They flipped out. That's why that box still goes for, like, $300 on eBay. We're sold out. We've been sold out for a long time. So they're, like, a prize possession to people. But we still have, like, I think 10 of the of those little statues left, so once those are gone, they're out.
Man, now that's at the top of my list. Like, I you're not making this easy on me.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
So what other crazy stuff, just like off the wall things?
We made a Velcro wallet for Freedom Planet. That was fun. I think like half the team still uses it personally. So it's like a 90s style Velcro wallet with the main character on the front of the wallet. So that was a lot of fun.
Velcro wallet, that's awesome. Oh, my Lord.
We made a magnet set for Rogue Legacy where it had all the different attributes that you could have for your character when it like auto-generated. If you've never played Rogue Legacy, it's about a guy that he tries to take over this castle. He dies. Thankfully, he has three heirs, and you can choose to play as one of them. And that cycle continues further and further down the road. As you choose an heir, they all have these weird like hiccups or anomalies. They can be things like only seeing monochrome or walking backwards or not being susceptible to gravity. Or just being bald. And so flatulence, exactly. So we did a magnet set of every attribute that you could get for one of your heirs, and we made a magnetic fridge frame where you could put in like your own picture or a picture of family member or friend or whatever and create different different attributes for them and you know, put it up on your fridge. Like that's just, you know, fun things to do, man. I love that stuff.
That is magical. And by the way, if you're listening to the show and you haven't played Rogue Legacy, we can't be friends anymore. So like that's a game you need to play.
Yeah. That's like essential indie.
And it's on every platform now. So you really don't have an excuse.
Oh, that's true. What game are you playing right now?
Me, I've been playing way too much Forza Horizon 3 and Rock Band 4 Rivals.
Okay.
How about you? What have you been playing?
My like bigger games, I'm a console peasant.
Dude, I'm right there with you. We're not peasants. We are the true master race.
That's what I tell people. Like PC, console master race, man. You don't have any like driver updates or anything. You just play.
Exactly. Plug and play. And now we don't even have to blow on the cartridges anymore.
That's right. I play Overwatch on PS4. If you want to add me, I'm the third M, THE3RDM.
I would definitely have to add. Are you on Xbox as well or just PlayStation?
No, not Xbox, no.
Boo!
I know. They got to fix their UI if they want me to buy it.
Really? That's the problem? Because I hate the PlayStation 4's menus and the UI.
Oh, see, that's just my excuse because I can't afford an Xbox, but it's fun to say.
Hey, $250 on Black Friday.
Oh, but, man, I can get a $300 4K TV on Black Friday.
Is it really going to be a good 4K TV, though, if it's only $300?
Actually, I think it's $399, and it's a Samsung TV that has really great reviews. The only thing they changed on it to make it unique was they took away the smart remote and gave you a basic remote.
Mm.
But it's the same television that has fantastic reviews on Amazon.
But, as long as it doesn't explode, right?
Right, exactly. As far as indie games go, let's see. Recently, I've been playing Valhalla, which is like a bartending simulator.
Interesting.
That's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's really cool. Valhalla is VA-11HALL-A. So it's very weird to try to type, but it's good.
I just saw one of my friends playing that on Steam like 10 minutes ago. I got the little pop-up notification.
Oh, nice.
Is that going to be part of IndieBox?
No comment.
I can neither confirm nor deny these accusations set against me.
Because IndieBox is such a big thing now, so no comment. What else?
That's a confirmation to me. I'm warning you.
No, I don't know if you can say that or not.
Well, I could. It doesn't mean I'm right.
I would love to work on Valhalla. Just throwing it out there. It'd be fantastic. What else? Halcyon 6, obviously. Played quite a good deal of that game. Fantastic game. Yeah. And then I play a lot of games that are like developers reach out to us and ask us to evaluate their game and things like that for possibility of working together on a subscription box or other private label stuff that we do. So one game that I'm really excited about is Typo Man. Typo Man's really good. I'm trying to think. What else? Jeez. There's so many games.
There's way too many games. There's an absurd number of games coming out lately.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to coming out either through the end of the year or early next year?
Let's see. I think I'm looking forward to most is actually how the PS4 Pro works with indie developers. So they've had some indie games already come out and be announced for the 4K stuff for PS4 Pro. So I'm really excited to see you know, what indie developers are going to do with the improved hardware. Because they're, you know, indie games are traditionally less graphic intensive than like AAA games, obviously, but there have been some really fantastic ones. What was the space shooter that PS4 launched with their first
Super Stardust?
Is that what it was called?
I think there's like four Super Stardust at this time.
So PlayStation Plus, the very first game that they gave away for free was an indie game for PS4. And it was like a 360-degree rotational space shooting game that had, like, pixel craziness.
Yeah, I think Super Stardust Ultra or Super Stardust Galaxy, one of those. I like how we're just both typing away. Stardust PS4.
The internet exists for a reason, man. We got to figure this out.
Super Stardust HD was on PS3, Super Stardust Ultra, and then Ultra VR. I gotta play the VR upgrade of that. There's too much stuff. Too much stuff, man.
So much stuff. Alright, 2015 is when PlayStation came out, right? No.
Hold on. 14? I don't know.
Rezogun.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one too.
Yeah, so Rezogun came out, and it's an indie title, and graphically, like, the math behind all those pixels and optimizations that needed to happen made it just a gorgeous game. And so I'm really interested to see what indie developers can do with the new hardware. It's going to be good.
Indeed it will. Yeah, I'm excited to check it out, too. I know we're getting to the time that you got to get going. There is so much more to talk about. You've got to come back sometime.
Dude, I would love to. Yeah, pencil me in. I'll talk about whatever. We can even talk about, I don't know, wrestling.
Hell yeah, man. Are you a wrestling fan?
I'm a massive wrestling fan.
God damn it, and you got to go. Shit. I'm mad because SmackDown's in my town tomorrow and I don't have money to go.
Well, you need to stand outside the arena and just ask for tickets, man.
Tempting, very tempting.
Just bum your way in.
And it's the 900th episode of SmackDown. It's like Undertaker's going to be there. Edge is going to be there.
Have you ever seen Undertaker live?
Yes.
Okay. You got to do that at least once in your life. So at least you've done it.
The last time it was years and years ago. My big thing was I got to die having seen the NWO live. Like the Hogan, Nash, and Hall when they first came to WWE. I was like, I lived. This is, and now he's going down as a racist guy who just won millions off a Gawker. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I do thank you for coming on and chatting with me. Let us definitely do this again sometime. It has been a pleasure chatting with you. Do you have any final words to end the chat?
Actually, you know what? I do. Thank you for inviting me to come on your podcast. And thank you guys for all listening to the ramblings of a crazy guy that loves physical medium.
They do that weekly the way it is. So
if anyone's interested in checking us out, our website is theindiebox.com. That's also all of our social media accounts at theindiebox on Twitter, Facebook / theindiebox as well, Instagram at theindiebox. Just for your listeners, if anybody wants to sign up, I'm going to give you guys a 20% off coupon that's just unique to the podcast. So you can go ahead theindiebox.com, and when you get to the selection of your plan that you want, 1, 3, 6, or 12 months, go through the checkout process and enter in the code. Let's do Rezogun. How about that?
Sounds good.
The code Rezogun, and you get 20% off. And we'll keep that going for I don't know, about a week or two after you release the podcast. How about that?
Sounds good. That's awesome. That gives me an excuse to sign up too.